You're listening to the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, where it's all about helping you grow your Denver real estate portfolio. Here's your host, Chris Lopez.
So continuing with our Denver house hacking series, today we're talking with Travis Speer because his house hacking story is a textbook example of how it can launch your real estate investing career. So if house hacking is on your radar, then read our Denver house hacking guide at denverinvestmentrealestate.com/househack. And we're also starting to teach some live classes on house hacking too. So go to denverinvestmentrealestate.com/calendar. Also, if you're enjoying our podcast, please go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. It would mean a lot to Charles and myself. All right, here's the show. Enjoy.
Hi, everybody. This is Charles Roberts. Today, I have the pleasure of talking with my friend and colleague, Travis Speer from Pine Financial. We're going to talk about house hacking, and Travis has just an incredible story. We were just sitting for half an hour, even before I turned on the record button, just to talk about what he's up to right now and what's going on. But in this podcast, we are going to talk about how he got started in real estate investing, which is a terrific house hacking story. So without further ado, let me turn it over to you, Travis.
Very good. Thank you, Charles, and thank you for the opportunity. Always great to see you, catch up, and offer some value to your podcast here. So, Charles asked that we talk about the house hacking and kind of how that worked out for me, and I'm going to be real open about that and share as much as I can today. Interesting timing when I got into real estate. I was just telling Charles, I bought this triplex in Aurora near First and Havana in 2010, and at that time, real estate was not exactly on the rebound, and most people my age had seen that real estate was a poor investment their entire adult life. So,
how old were you at that time?
In 2010, I would have been 26.
Quick, he's doing the math. He's looking up at the lights. This is a loan officer we're talking about
right here.
Okay, you were 26, had never owned a property before.
That's right. And so somewhat fresh, you know, out of school in my first job at that time, which I'd recently quit my W-2 income and started at Pine Financial full time. So I wasn't the greatest candidate for this loan that I needed to get, but I had a girlfriend at the time who was on board for some type of real estate investing. And so she had to get the loan because I didn't have the W-2 income. We both ended up signing on it. And I was just telling Charles earlier that, boy, I would never do that again. But the good news, that worked out. We got engaged that fall and ended up getting married and still married. So everything worked out there. So in 2010, I bought this 3-unit for $165,000. And, if you know anything about the Denver real estate pricing now, you can fall out of your chair. You know, I'll give you a second to get back up. I did a 203K loan. FHA 203K is where an owner-occupied can get the money to purchase the property and to do the repairs to it. So I did this 203K loan. We bought it for $165,000. We had about $30,000 in repairs. So our basis at that time was $195,000. I'll never forget sitting in the closing, the loan officer looks at me and says, wow, the payment on this is only whatever it was at the time, $1,250 a month. And I immediately realized a couple of things. One, she says, well, you could rent these units for $400 each and make money. So I immediately realized she didn't know anything about real estate investing. But secondly, I also realized that she didn't believe that I was actually going to live in this property. She immediately thought that I was just going to rent it out. So we close on the property. We fix it up. Takes a couple of months. We did almost all of the work herself. I replumbed the entire house. The copper had been stolen. my wife, Natalie, did the tile in one of the bathrooms. I mean, total learning experience. I grew up around construction, so nothing too new, but, one or two people working on a property to do a $30,000 rehab on a pretty good sized building. It's about 5,000 square feet, including the basements. So we worked through that, got the work done July-ish, and then we started renting the units up. So I lived in the smallest one of the units, and we rented out the other two. At that time, rents weren't nearly as strong as they are today. So we rent up the two units and I was really shy. And this is where house hacking or even buying rental property in general, you have to kind of look at yourself in the mirror and ask yourself if you're ready for that. And so, when I'd see the tenants outside, I would pretend like I was just a tenant because I at that ripe age of 26 years old, I was concerned of working with people who might take advantage of me or think like, oh, this guy's, look how young he is. Can he do this? Is this his property? And them knowing that you're the owner, what would that result in with them knocking on the door, asking for things to be repaired? So for a little while, I tried to act like I didn't know who owned the building, and they would just need to call the landlord, who was me when I got to the office. So we worked through that, and eventually the tenants did know that I was the owner.
And you were actually living there.
Yeah, I was living there in one of the units, yeah. So that is also a little interesting, but it can certainly be done.
So what's that like? Let's go a little deeper into that, because house hacking, we have in our series talking with Joe Massey, talking about the lending and the advantages. And we talked to Mark Cunningham about the property management and the things you need to think about. But you're a guy who actually started his career investing in real estate, living, and that was first in Havana, which was, you know, not Wash Park.
Sure.
Exactly at the time. So what were you thinking?
You know, as the other people you talked about, Mark and Joe, when you talk about the numbers, this makes sense every single time. The numbers. This is an opportunity. I was basically living for free, a couple hundred bucks a month in my pocket. The numbers will always tell you, wow, this is really good. But you have to start to consider how you deal with people, right? I mean, these are your tenants. If they're late on the rent, are you going to go knock on their door and ask for it? If they're knocking on the door at 6 o'clock on Saturday before you're ready to head out to dinner with your friends, are you going to go take a look at their toilet that's leaking? So it was definitely uncomfortable. I mean, there's no question about it. It was uncomfortable, but absolutely worth it. And I think that two ways that you can maybe combat that if you're not comfortable with it is, one, if you are somewhat comfortable with it, you have to set the boundaries immediately. Hey, this is when I'm available. You can email me, call me, or text me, but you can't come knock on my door. Like, hey, I'm at home too, you know, when I'm here. The other thing is maybe you just use property management, which might seem silly. You live there right at the property. Why would you use property management? But if you're not comfortable managing tenants, then that could be a really, really good tool for you to kind of still have that hands-off approach, but make money on a property you're going to live in. I guess where it mostly gets weird is if somebody gets behind on their rent, or if you need to do an eviction or something like that, and you're essentially evicting your neighbor, you might, you know, feel for your safety or something like that. But I find all in all, things are pretty good in that arena. Most people are human at the end of the day. I did have a couple of people that had to move out. They just couldn't afford it, and it just didn't work out. So they moved out. They didn't leave it in the greatest shape, but, you know, no altercation or anything like that. So going from there, we rented that property. I lived there for a while before we actually ended up moving to Northwest, up towards Lafayette, as Natalie took a job in Boulder. And we continued to rent it out. And one of the things Charles and I were discussing before this is I said, gosh, I don't know if I would ever suggest that somebody buys a property with somebody they're just dating. But he made the comment that, well, how would that have changed your future in buying rental properties? And, you know, I had to take a step back and think, gosh, that's absolutely true. Natalie and I bought that first unit. And just to give you the numbers on it, I told you I bought it at 165, repairs around 30. So my base is about 195,000. With the 203K loan, we put 3% down. So pretty small amount to get in. When we rented that unit, when we moved out, the rents at that time were just under $3,000 a month. The payment was about $1,250 or $1,300 a month. So there's a pretty good spread there. So that made sense. But where that really helped us was when we bought the next rental property, which was that fall, because now we had this asset that, even using the financing that Joe probably covered, they'll give you 75% of your lease rates. So at $3,000 a month, 75% is $2,200 a month. I told you the payment was $1,200. So I had $1,000 positive cash flow immediately. That gave the opportunity to buy more rental property because I was able to use that income right off of the bat, even though on the next properties, they would also give 75% of the lease amount for the refinance. So it gave us positive cash flow in a way that, you know, this is a time when you're buying properties for $70,000, $80,000, $100,000. So your payments are $500-$600 a month. So to have a $1,000 positive cash flow on a building really helped with that. And then, of course, from there, continued to buy more rental properties, and today have about 12.
So lessons, somebody comes up to you, they're 25 years old and they want to do this, you know. What do you say to them? Positives and negatives. Do you encourage people to do it?
Yeah, so absolutely. There's still opportunities for this. A lot of times, you know, when as old folk talk about being in real estate investing in Denver, it's like, it seems so prohibitive to somebody who's new because of the pricing. But one thing that's sometimes we have to remember is that rents have gone up just as strong as prices have. So will house hacking work today? Absolutely, it will still work. But the biggest challenge with house hacking, would I recommend somebody does it? Absolutely, I would. You're not going to live in the neighborhood you want to live in. You're going to live in a neighborhood that you essentially need to live in order for this to work. What I mean by that, and Charles made a comment about Wash Park earlier, there's not duplexes for sale in Wash Park or triplexes or four unit buildings that will work for house hacking in a price point that somebody who needs to house hack needs to be in. Mm-hmm. So at this point in time, you're talking about probably areas like North Aurora, Southwest Denver, even some spots in kind of south and east of Westminster, where there's some fourplexes and stuff up there. Absolutely, I think that someone should do it. There's such a great benefit in the financials. What it comes down to is where you want to live, and is that going to be outside of where your buddies live or something like that? But from a financial standpoint, it makes perfect sense. The benefit to a house hacker or owner-occupied buyer is that because the financing is so much friendlier to you, you could effectively pay more for it than a straight investor could. You're likely going to get financing that's going to allow you somewhere between, say, 3 and 10% down. So your payment would be a little bit higher, but the opportunity to not need to cash flow as strong because you're potentially living for free in the unit really makes a difference for that owner-occupied buyer, which really makes it help. The downside I would tell somebody is like, if you want to do this, which I absolutely think you should, whether it's buying a multi-unit or another guy I know bought a five-bedroom house in Southwest Denver and he just rents it to his friends. It's kind of the same thing, except for you don't have that separation of the units. And of course, if you rented it down the road, you probably wouldn't get as much because you don't have a bunch of buddies. You have a family or something renting the property. Is that you're not going to live in the most desirable areas. And it could be challenging after you get married. And I say that because typically when somebody gets married, they're going to have kids or something, want to live in a neighborhood that maybe is a little better than where these type of units are typically located.
But you ended up only living there for a relatively short period of time.
Correct.
If I remember correctly, it was exactly 366 days.
Right.
The IRS is listening right now. So, a year and a day, something like that.
Sure. So absolutely. And Joe probably covers some of that as to meet the terms of the notice, you need to live there for 1 year. So you can pretty easily buy that first one and move on to the next one. And you could potentially buy another multi-unit, or you could then at that point in time buy a single family house and continue to grow your rental portfolio outside of that. But it is absolutely the easiest way from a down payment perspective, ability to how much you're going to pay and to be cash flowing typically right off of the bat to buy a multi-unit, 2, 3, or 4 unit building.
So let's talk a little bit about where you've taken this, where your career has gone. You started with a relatively simple house hack, which, by the way, was before the term house hack had been coined by some really smart media person. This was just a way to get into real estate.
Right.
What are you up to now? Well, first of all, let's talk about the numbers on this property because you still own this property.
Yeah.
And then let's talk about where this has taken you in your investing career.
Sure. So Charles and I were just discussing before the recording the numbers on this property. So I told you in 2010 when I bought it that the rents were about $3,000 a month with all the units rented. And I went on at that pace for a while, but I was pretty active in buying rental properties, buying single family houses, rehabbing them and renting them. And so my focus was on acquisition. My focus wasn't as much on property management. Probably maybe one of the challenges as a self-managed property manager is that, your mind is that nobody can do it as good as you can, but it's easier to fall behind on things like rent increases and that kind of stuff. So I still own this unit, this building today, and I actually had a verbal contract with somebody to sell it in the spring for $420,000. I thought $420,000 seemed a little long, but if they were going to buy it, I'd sell it to them.
And let's remind everybody, what did you pay for this thing?
Yeah, so my basis was $195,000.
$195,000, and that was in 2010. This is 2017. So 7 years later, you hit a really good period of time.
Sure.
My goodness.
More than doubled, in value. And so I thought, well, I'd sell it if she wanted to buy it for this price. We were going back and forth. She ended up backing out. So it's okay, that's fine. I'm going to keep it, but I'm going to put some work into it. So I spent just under $30,000. I kicked out two of the tenants who had been there for a long time, completely under rented, just weren't the type of tenants that I wanted to have in my portfolio today. Rehabbed those units, actually ended up putting a new roof on it with a hailstorm, really dressed up the building. And so the front unit, which previously rented for maybe like $1,150 or something like that, when I got them out and got a rehab, now I'm at $1,920 a month on that front unit. Mm-hmm. The middle unit rents for $1,600 a month. And the last end unit is, it's still a little bit under rented now, but the market rent would be $1,600. So now if I had that thing rented, that last unit all at market rents, we're talking about $5,000 a month. So and also in that 7 years, the rents came up, almost by 50% also. So and on a building where the mortgage payment is around $1,200 a month. So it's wild to think. I mean, of course, things have gone well in the Denver market from values and rents and that type of stuff. But if you look at rents historically, with the information Charles provides, is when things get tough in a downturn, the rents are I don't want to use the term unaffected, but $50 a month would be a lot for rents to go down, where we've just seen them go up. So even if things flatline now, or if they would have flatlined then, it would still be in a position that that the property would have continued to make sense to hold as a rental property. It was a great way to get in. It definitely helped to produce the cash flow for other properties. So you talked about, you know, kind of where things went. From there, that fall, I bought another single family house, also in Aurora. And then I started to focus in on the Montbello neighborhood in Northeast Denver. Ended up buying, I think, 5 houses there. And now this was all the time of using the strategy of buy, fix it up, and refinance it. That strategy worked a lot better at this time because there was a lot more distressed properties than there are today. Not to say it doesn't work today, it's just a little more challenging. So I continued to buy some rental properties. And then in 2013, I bought a house in Southwest Denver at 1800 South Raleigh Street. And I bought that property for like 114, fixed it up, and got the refinance at 180. This house is like 900 square feet, no garage, yada, yada. At that time, I thought these prices had come up too fast. I'm done. I'm not going to buy rental properties.
That's 2013.
Yeah.
And you're a real smart guy. And you said, yeah, the market's probably peaking. And 4 years later, you're saying, yeah, the market's probably peaking.
Right. So at that time, it was hard for me to understand how this house was going to go for $180,000. I just couldn't wrap my mind around it. So I really backed off on rental properties. At that point in time, though, instead of investing the money in rental properties, I had some cash available. So I started doing some new construction projects around Sloan's Lake. But I'll tell you, I came full circle. And as we were talking earlier, so in 2013, I thought, I don't know if I want to do this. 2015, I bought another unit. 2016, I bought 2. And then just 6 months ago, I bought 1 more. So I'm still seeing rental real estate to be a good investment in our market. And these aren't steals. This is essentially retail deals mm-hmm. in neighborhoods that I know the rents, especially here, Section 8, is strong enough to make a good investment. And so still continuing to buy. And we were just chatting earlier about another opportunity that came up that I think will ultimately pass on. Charles might be interested just because of some other things I have going on.
Yeah, we're picking it up. So yeah. thank you very much. Yeah. And I will not tell you the address.
So it's interesting, though, if you keep kind of a pulse on the market, you understand it, you have the right people in your network to bring you deals. They don't have to be home runs. So we hit plenty of home runs. We don't have to hit those anymore. You know, we're like one of the best hitters late in their baseball career or something. Right now, we just hit singles and doubles, but we hit plenty of home runs that we don't have to hit those anymore. Our current portfolio performs so well that to add a property now is like, okay, it may not be the strongest cash flow. The rest of the portfolio hedges it, but it's in a great area, or it's an area where I think I can get a great rent increase or something like that. So maybe a tad bit more strategic in the purchasing than just buying anything that made sense like we would have previously.
So you're doing a lot of construction. You've had several large projects, another one you're going on. So just to kind of tease people where if they can get into real estate and if they can actually make money, where have you taken your career now?
Sure. So, and you kind of say the tease, and it's funny because I was just talking with a neighbor the other day who has a very, very successful construction business, but he's only ever owned that business, not really any real estate. And to think about what we were able to buy over the last 7 years and how that's changed really our life from a cash flow and from even a net worth perspective of these properties continuing to go up in value. Now, of course, I don't think they will forever, but we've bought them in such a great place that it, frankly, it doesn't really matter what happens. So that gave me the ability to do a new construction project that I started in 2013, right after I said I wasn't buying rentals anymore, and finished in 2015 using some of those proceeds to buy another rental property. I parlayed that money into another new construction project south of Sloan's Lake that we were just talking about as an 8-unit project. I bought that lot in 2015, and we're just coming out of the resale side now on 8 units in 2017, doing really well on these projects. And then I'll likely, actually, I'm going to parlay the money from that project into another slightly bigger project in Jefferson Park, which is near Mile High Stadium, to do another new construction project. Just continuing to see that the profits make sense in these larger deals right now, much more than fix and flips and that kind of thing. But likely what I'll do coming out of that is to use those proceeds to buy more rental property. Anybody who's seen me speak or we've had the opportunity to chat, rental property is my favorite. When the tenants come in the office, they drop off their money and they're giving you sometimes $2,000 for the opportunity to live in your house for 30 days. That gets me excited. High five myself, you know, I'm like, cool, you know, filling out the deposit slip. And that brings some enjoyment to me. And the whole idea when we started investing, Natalie and I, was to get that cash flow to a certain point where, you know, life, it doesn't really matter what we do. We can travel, we can live, we can sit on the couch, we do whatever we want because the cash flow will come in strong enough to provide a good life for ourselves and our family and generations to come, hopefully.
And you're 33 years old at this time.
Yeah, I turned 33 this year. Yeah. So in 7 short years, things went well and have progressed well. But the cool thing about real estate to me is that anybody can do it if you take the time to understand it. And of course, can have the financial resources to do the deals. But it's just been a really wild ride and it's been fun.
Which gets us back to the point of this podcast, house hacking. Typically, people who want to do house hacking don't have $500,000 in the bank.
Right.
Or they would be they're saying, you know what, I want to get into this. I'm renting right now. What should I do? And we talk about, I don't know, maybe buy a duplex and live in one side. Maybe buy a ranch with a finished basement or finish the basement,
sure.
Rent downstairs, maybe do some VRBO stuff, right? But it brings us around to, you don't really need an enormous amount of money. What you need is a long-term plan, I think, and the will to do this and the ability to take some risks because, you know, you and me and our pals, we sit around drinking beers talking about the latest psychopathic
right.
tenant and your muscles are slightly bigger than mine, you know, but Kevin's gun is bigger than
yeah.
both of us, you know, so there is a lot to be said for this, but man, it can work for you if you work it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, taking the risk is one thing, but it can be such a calculated risk that I don't even know that I would identify it as a risk anymore this part of my career. And when you understand the numbers, understand the financing, understand how everything works, you're going to make some sacrifices. You're likely going to, like I said earlier, live in a neighborhood that isn't, you know, right downtown or isn't in the hippest spot. But gosh, you know, now with Uber and Lyft and that mm-hmm. kind of stuff, I don't know that it matters where you live.
Right.
It's just so easy to get around, maybe like it hasn't been previously. But if you just did one of these deals, and we'll just use the 3 unit I bought as an example, in 7 years, it doubled in value and creates $5,000 a month in rent, you know, minus the payment, you know, about $3,500 in my pocket every month. So if you just bought one, how would that change your life? And then when you start to understand how your life would change with one, you think, well, how would that change with two or three or four? And one question I like to pose to people, especially if you're considering rental real estate, is think about your parents' or your grandparents' retirement and how much different it would have been if they would have bought just one rental property and what would it have been like if they would have bought two. My guess, it would have significantly changed basically their retirement years, their cash flow position, and of course, the assets that would eventually be passed down. So when you start to consider that, save a little bit of money, put it into a real estate, a property. And if you're in it, if you're a true long-term investor, if you're worried about us being at the top of the market right now, but you're a true long-term investor, I would tell you that the value really doesn't matter because you don't know where it's going to be in 5, 7, 10, 15, or 20 years. Charles has mentioned, I mean, multiple properties he's bought 20 years ago. And you know, that it's crazy to think 20 years, it seems like such a long time. But when you consider that over the course of 20 years, those properties have been worth a ton. They've been worth very little.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Now they're, you know, back up.
Back
so,
up.
But as long as the cash comes out the front door every month, the value doesn't really matter.
Yeah. Because I personally, I'm never going to sell my property. So I care because it's fun at a cocktail party.
Sure.
To like, oh, I got all this, but I don't really care because I'm not going to sell it. To me,
right.
It's all about the cash flow.
Yeah. So at that point, the values don't matter. It's all about what's coming out the front door every month in rent. And as long as that meets your needs and your requirements from an investment standpoint, that's really all that matters.
It's awesome. Let's talk a little bit about your day job. You still have a day job.
Yes.
What exactly do you do, Mr. Spear?
Yeah. So, you know, the day job is still originating hard money loans with Pine Financial Group. You know, we're in Colorado, we're in Minnesota, we're doing a ton of loans. We're doing some flips, we're funding some new construction projects, but this business has also changed with the time. As the market's changed, as the inventory situation has changed, there's less opportunity for people. So we've had to get a little more creative, get a little more aggressive with our pricing and that kind of stuff, but still seeing this to be a fantastic time to invest. And people who really understand financing are still open to using our high rate, expensive, high leverage financing. But if the deal supports it, then it makes sense to do that. And you could do maybe more than one deal at a time. So hard money lending is an interesting business, raising money from private individuals, turn around and lending it to people who do fix and flips or new construction or buy, fix and refinance type of projects. And that's been good too. I've been doing that since actually the same time at 2010. So actually I started in 2009. So I just passed 8 years in this business and that's been exciting too.
So one of the things you and I and our colleagues do is we spend a lot of time with people who are looking to get into the business. And speaking for myself, and I know I can speak for you, we just speak really frankly to people. And there are people who we say, you know, this might not be right for you. But want to give you the opportunity to invite people to call you. Yes, if they have a hard money need, that's awesome. But you're willing to talk with people and just kind of shoot the proverbial shit and talk about what they might be thinking about doing in real estate, because this is why we get up in the morning. We get to meet nice people.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you can look up Pine Financial Group, or the number at the office is 303-835-4445. I'd be happy to chat with you. You know, I finally got to a point in my investing career where I was less shy about sharing what I've done, because I've been young and I kind of felt weird to brag, if you will. But now I've gotten to a point where I'd love to chat with you if you're working on a deal or you want to get something done, or you're even new to real estate. Let's have a phone conversation. Let's email. Let's chat a little bit, because when I got into the business, I leaned a lot on people who had already done things, like the Charles Roberts of the world and Kevin and that kind of stuff. I leaned a lot on those people, and they really helped me to get to where I am. So I would love to be that resource for anybody listening to help you, whether it's underwrite a rental deal or understand how things should work or financing or whatever it might be. I'd love to have that conversation.
Great. Well, thanks, Travis. Really appreciate it. And thanks for hanging on with us. We'll catch you on the next podcast.